Hey, it's Greg Brown. Grab your logbook, because it's time for another cockpit adventure from the flying carpet. I'm an aviation author, adventure columnist, photographer, former National Flight Instructor of the Year, and Barnes & Noble Arizona Author of the Month. The flying carpet is a four-place single-engine light airplane. In it, my wife Jean and I have long traveled the North American continent, searching behind clouds for the real America, and experiencing aerial adventures like today's all along the way. Learn more at my website, gregbrownflyingcarpet.com, where you can also see photos from most episodes. And I'd appreciate your feedback in my Flying Carpet Podcast Facebook group. This time, flight number 9, Flying the Mists of Time, about a little-known aviation event leading up to one of the United States' most heinous terrorism acts. Okay, everyone, scramble aboard my flying carpet, buckle your seatbelts, and prepare for takeoff on today's adventure, Flying the Mists of Time. Clear prop. Usually the skies between Flagstaff, Arizona and Palm Springs, California are brutally blue. But this would be no normal journey. En route to an aviation convention, Jean and I launched our flying carpet over a dense silvery blanket of prescribed forest fire smoke. Then, when rare swirling clouds cloaked the primeval and normally sun-baked Mojave Desert, it seemed we were treading not mere miles, but the surreal mists of time. And as it turned out, in a sense we were. For at the convention I met someone connected to my hazy beginnings as a pilot. As usual when attending such events, I studied the arrival procedures ahead of time and reviewed them with Jean during our two-hour flight. With hundreds of airplanes converging from all directions, it wouldn't do to make mistakes. After tracing the event's well-oiled arrival procedures, we landed to a warm welcome in the lively desert community. Rewarding as it is to refresh skills, attend seminars, and examine the latest aircraft and accessories, for me, the best part of such gatherings is visiting with aviator friends, old and new. Wandering the outdoor static exhibits with this in mind, I discovered an airplane with a sign labeled Maury's West Coast Adventures. Longtime instructor and pilot examiner Field Maury is legendary for his cross-country instrument training courses, so I was delighted to find him working the booth. Field is now based in Medford, Oregon. But when I was a young University of Wisconsin student, he operated family-owned Maury Field, now officially named Middleton Municipal Airport, just across Lake Mendota from Madison's Truax Field, where I learned to fly at Frickleton Aviation. Introducing myself, I explained how as a newly minted pilot, I'd often flown over Maury Field, though I'd never landed there. That's because Maury Field was off-limits to Frickleton students in those days, he told me, due to the short, narrow runway. Together we reminisced about examiner and flight school owner Claude Frickleton, who delivered my private pilot check ride in 1972. Greg, were you at Madison in 1970 when UW's Sterling Hall Army Mass Center was bombed? Asked Field. Forgotten memories of that turbulent era flooded back. My stint as a badger occurred at the height of the Vietnam anti-war movement. I was no activist, but my friends and I needn't go looking for demonstrations. Sometimes they found us on our way to class. Police patrolled the streets in what we referred to as tanks, panel trucks with barred windows and back for launching tear gas and detaining arrested protesters. One time I got entangled when protesters deflated city bus tires to block bustling State Street. Fortunately, my dorm buddy Fred, an Army veteran, had shown us how to soak handkerchiefs for tear gas protection during demonstrations. During another protest, police shot tear gas into our dorm, an ill-conceived act as it forced hundreds of us residents to flee the building into throngs of protesters filling the streets. There were more benign protests, too, as when feminists stormed the men-only swimming pool in the UW Armory building. Guys swam nude there in those days, so the protesters stripped their clothes and jumped in, too. I arrived a year after the Sterling Hall bombing, I explained to Field, but was well aware of it. Every day walking to class, I remember looking up to blue sky through the windows of the empty shell of that building blown up by anti-war activists. The search for the bombing's ringleader, Carlton Armstrong, still dominated the news at the time, even as the conspirators were lauded on anti-war t-shirts around campus. "Then you'll appreciate this story, Greg," said Field. He explained how in 1969, a year before the bombing, he'd hired Carlton's younger brother and later co-conspirator, Dwight, to work at Maury Field, where he swapped duties for flying lessons. "Dwight was the first employee I ever fired," said Field. "After he'd worked there a few months and accumulated maybe 10 hours of lessons, Carlton accused him of aiding the Vietnam War effort by transporting ROTC students from campus to Maury Field for flight training. When Dwight refused to continue driving the shuttle, I fired him." Several months later, on New Year's morning, 1970, Field received a call from the Sauk County Sheriff asking, "Do you own a Cessna 150, November 63526? We found it abandoned in 2 inches of snow this morning at Sauk Prairie Airport." Convening at Maury Field, which was closed for the holiday, Field and Chief Instructor Jake Bloyer discovered the hangar door jimmied and several airplanes pulled out to access the stolen 150 from the back. It seemed odd at the time that thieves would bypass more capable and convenient aircraft to get at the 150, said Field. Driving to Sauk Prairie, he and Jake found the tiny two-seat trainer sitting on the snow-covered runway with its flaps extended. "New Year's Eve night had been instrument flying conditions in light snow," said Field, "so I was amazed that someone had successfully flown the airplane in such conditions and safely landed in dark of night on an unlighted snow-covered field." Other than a dead battery from the master switch being left on, the airplane was in good enough shape to fly home. Jake hand-propped it, and when the alternator wouldn't energize to recharge the battery to raise the electric flaps, he flew it home with the flaps down. "The next day, law enforcement agents swarmed over Maury Field and combed our training records," said Field. "Not until months later did I learn the plane had been stolen in the middle of the night by Dwight and Carlton Armstrong, who used it to drop a homemade fertilizer bomb out the window on the Badger Army Ammunition Plant near Baraboo." "I remember that incident, Field," I told him. "Despite minimal damage, it stirred nationwide panic about potential terrorist attacks." "That's right, Greg." Moving those other flyable planes out of the hangar suddenly made sense when I realized the stolen 150 was the one Dwight had done all his training in. And it turned out that the pair's nighttime landing at Sauk Prairie on several inches of snow was illuminated only by Carl's girlfriend's auto headlights. Field expressed astonishment that someone with just 10 hours of dual instruction from months earlier should complete such a challenging flight. Fortunately, the bombing did no damage. In fact, no one even knew of the act until Carl Armstrong phoned UW's Daily Cardinal student newspaper the following day to brag about it. But based on this incident, the Armstrongs proclaimed themselves the New Year's Gang, and with two co-conspirators continued an anti-war crime spree culminating 8 months later in the bombing of Sterling Hall on August 24, 1970. The massive blast killed one researcher, injured three others, and damaged 24 buildings. Three perpetrators ultimately served prison time, but the fourth was never caught. "Believe it or not," I told Field, "I too am connected to the story. My late uncle was the Canadian judge who extradited Carlton back to Wisconsin after he was eventually captured in Ontario. I dared not tell anyone at the time because anti-war sentiment was still so heated. Following 2 days of seminars, social events, and hangar talk, Gene and I steered homeward from Palm Springs. Ice-filled cumulus awaited us across the Colorado River in Arizona, so we detoured south over lower terrain to stay beneath them. Only in the final moments of flight did it become clear that we'd actually make it home versus landing elsewhere. But the clouds parted as we approached Flagstaff, and we completed our journey amid stunning panoramas of rainbows and red rock. We'd returned to the present. Your years of piloting experience sure pay off on a trip like this between tough weather decisions and flying into a busy convention, said Jean. I thanked her, but my mind was fixated on a long-ago dark and snowy New Year's Eve. Riding fearfully along with a 10-hour student pilot as he launched into awful weather at night, and through some combination of luck and skill, identified a target, navigated to an unlighted airport, and landed on a snow-covered runway illuminated only by auto headlights. If only his piloting mission had been heroic rather than dastardly, the feat might still be remembered today. I hope you found the culmination of this episode as surprising, thought-provoking, and horrifying as I did. To learn more about the events, characters, and details surrounding this story, track down a copy of RADS, that's R-A-D-S, an excellent nonfiction book by Tom Bates, recommended by Field Maury. It's out of print, but there are still quite a few used copies available. For those who are interested, I've added a link to the Amazon page for that book on the Mists of Time podcast page on my website. Thanks for riding along on today's Flying Carpet Adventure. Please help me continue this podcast by sharing your favorite Flying Carpet episodes on social media, posting reviews on your favorite podcast directories, and donating via my Greg Brown Flying Carpet website. Thanks in advance for your support. You can find photos from most episodes at my website, gregbrownflyingcarpet.com. If you enjoyed today's episode, please check out my book of aviation adventure stories, Flying Carpet, The Soul of an Airplane, for which I was named Barnes & Noble Arizona Author of the Month. Learn about that and my other aviation books at gregbrownflyingcarpet.com. Also at gregbrownflyingcarpet.com, you'll find my Views from the Flying Carpet aerial photography, available in fine art metal prints and pilot achievement plaques. Oh, and I'd appreciate hearing your feedback in my Flying Carpet podcast Facebook group. Follow my social media sites, most of which can be found by searching Greg Brown Flying Carpet, and consider joining my student pilot pep talk group on Facebook. Thanks again for joining me on today's Flying Carpet Cockpit Adventure. Music by Hannes Brown. See you next time.